Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Wednesday, April 25th, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
That's it, baby, when you got it, flaunt it, flaunt it!
Good advice. Are you as excited about today's show as I am? As you know, last week I introduced you to an extraordinarily kinky guy who goes by the moniker Bootbrush. You will recall that he was here as part of both the Erotic Mind and the Sex Education series. Well, he returns today for part two of our chat. Bootbrush is the author of Assimilation: Tales of Transformation and Surrender, and to reward us for our patience over the past week, he will once again read from his work today.
I assume you're making those cartoon noises to attract my attention.
If you mean cartoon noises like my voice? Well, yeah. But wait, you didn't miss part one of this delectable conversation, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the site's search function in the header, type in podcast number 238, and presto. But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. For more of Bootbrush, visit his website, cleverly named bootbrushpup.blogspot.com. You can also find him on FetLife and follow him on Twitter, too. Look for these links in today's podcast posting. But before we begin, a word from our sponsor, the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack.
Oh, I hurt your feelings. Good. What is it?
For those who I've never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin, and trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It is phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? And remember, if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now, you can help underwrite this important sex-positive effort and jerk off at the same time. How great is that? Okay, on with the show. Bootbrush, thanks for coming back and joining us here at DrDickSexAdvice.com. I am so delighted that you had more time to spend with us, because last week was a real eye-opener, not just for me, but for our audience. And you're so well-spoken about your fetish and kink, and I just couldn't wait for you to come back and tell us more about it. So welcome.
It's an honor. Thank you very much. Thank you for making me welcome.
Well, we'll see to that this week.
Okay.
So I want to pick up exactly where we left off last week. You were talking about how you hit upon rubber as your fetish object. So I'd like to move on just slightly. You speak of the intense pleasure that your transformation creates within you, mm-hmm. and a desire for a metamorphosis that frees you and your rubber brethren from the limitations that humanity and society place upon you. So let's talk more about that, because we're talking so much more than just play, although, like last week, we talked that it is predominantly play, but the implications are enormous. Yes.
And the fact that play is in our society that gets so up on being serious and grown up and all that, we kind of denigrate play, and it becomes this thing that isn't important. And actually, I think play really, really is deeply important.
Yes.
It's part of what keeps us sane. Yes. In fact, actually, I'm sure it's one of the things that makes us human, is actually the ability to play and to enter into other headspaces.
If I could just interrupt for 1 second, because I was thinking since last week, our conversation last week, that a lot of religion, even modern religion, not just ancient religions, is all about play. It's about this human interaction with the divine, and it's a playful sort of thing. Yes.
There's still that concept of awe and being sort of slightly frightened because it's so big and so much bigger than us. I mean, like I said previously, I'm actually a pagan. I was raised a Catholic, but I am actually a pagan. And a lot of modern paganism, and BDSM play is actually very close to each other. Mm-hmm. Modern primitives, that whole concept of the modern primitives, and actually the amazing book Leatherfolk, I can't remember who wrote it, but actually was profound influence on my own BDSM play and explorations and stuff. That idea that actually you can, sex and sexuality can be an immense force that enables you to touch deeper, higher parts of yourself that potentially are the divine in themselves. And if you do so in a playful, light-hearted way, actually, it enables you to retain even higher. So, yes.
Wow.
So, as far as metamorphosis and stuff, I suppose it's kind of in exactly the same way that if you think about an insect, when an insect goes into its pupation phase, it's actually transformed. It takes everything that it is itself. It bounds it and then it changes it within
itself.
It's
broken down, actually. And reassembles it. It's just so amazing if you stop to think about it.
And becomes freed. It becomes from something that crawls along the ground into something that's liberated into fact, into flight.
Yes.
And actually, that metamorphosis, that freedom, that feeling, that's really what BDSM can be about. It's about taking the ordinary and transmuting it into something extraordinary. So much of life and society, it's about being normal, it's about fitting in. And yeah, that's great, that's really important. It's how we pay the mortgage, But at the same time, sometimes those limits just really chafe and you need to be free and you need to be able to step outside of your normal everyday self and to embrace something more than you are. You want to be able to lift your face up to the sky and soar a little bit. And I suppose fetish is one of the ways that you can do that. You have these roles, you dress in gear. It's like playing Let's Pretend or the dressing up box as a kid. You put on these clothes and you allow yourself to become what those clothes represent, and you allow yourself to step into the shoes of another.
Right. You say that rubber is the gateway to another world of masculinity and hunger, transformation and freedom, and rubber is the gateway that opens to bondage, hypnosis, pup play, water sports, etc.?
Yes.
Very cool.
Certainly. I suppose it does kind of make me sound a little obsessed.
But what part about passion is not obsessive, to some degree? I mentioned this to you last week in our conversation, is that what was so compelling about me reading your book was that it is so powerful, it's alive, it's like hearing a child speak about something that they had just discovered, there is no bounds. The child is just completely there, like, did you see that? Kind of thing.
Oh,
I know. And I loved it. I loved it. I absolutely. It's so compelling. Mm. And so I hope you never lose that. Honestly, I do. And if it borders on the obsessive, albeit so terrific. Good.
Obsession can sometimes be good, as long as it's taken somewhere useful.
Yes,
I suppose. It doesn't become a destructive thing, then sure. It can be a little expensive, but...
Well, what fetish isn't, you know? I mean, even if it's, you know, if it's a fetish for Apple products or religion or, you know, whatever our chosen fetish is, you know, wine or food or whatever it is.
Okay, that's so true, because actually one of the things, when you come out as a fetishist, that when you come out and go, actually, my thing is rubber or leather or running around as a dog or what have you, and everyone kind of goes, oh, he's into fetish, is he? And you think, well, actually, yeah, the way that you fetishize your iPhone or the way that you fetishize football, it's the same process. Yes. I mean, Freud would have exactly, since, you know, he wrote the whole stuff on fetish.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's exactly what you're doing. You're just investing a part of yourself into another, into something else as a key to be able to get you back into that headspace. So why not?
Yes.
Some of us do it over sex, others do it over iPhones, whatever. You know, whatever rocks your boat, I don't mind. I'm an all-inclusive pervert.
Right. Good for you. But interestingly enough, for many people in our audience, the whole idea of a fetish or a kink is a foreign concept to them, just as you were saying, because it by our culture we have relegated it over here to the dark recesses, you know, of sex play and whatnot. But as we're discovering, you know, I mean, fetishes are all over. And some of them are very popular, and society actually approbates them. So I sense that some may fear opening a door to the hidden recesses of their fantasy lives, but others have never had a kinky desire. And I know that's hard to believe, but I think it's true. And do you share that perception?
Yeah, I suppose, although I'm not sure whether nobody has a fetish.
Right.
It's just maybe they don't. You don't always recognize the fact that that's what it is.
Right.
You know, even just in ordinary popular society, you know, there is that whole thing of, well, are you a breast man or are you an ass man? You know,
right.
That in itself is a form of fetish.
Yeah.
Each of us has, even if we're just talking sexually, each of us has certain things that attract us for whatever reason they are. And it might be, you know, you love hair, you love long hair, it might be that you have a thing for redheads, you know, or what have you. In a kind of a way, that is a fetish. It just depends on whether or not it's been consciously recognized, embraced, and run with, which is more or less all the sexual fetishes and the gear fetishes and stuff. That's more or less all that we do. It's kind of recognizing that it's something we do naturally and actually taking it and running with it and being able to go, well, actually, this fabric for me, yes, rubber. Mm-hmm. Rubber makes me feel interesting. So actually, if that amount of rubber makes me feel interesting, how much would it buy? Well, 14 layers.
I'll show you.
As you put it, it's bloody difficult getting to a round. It's good to try. So yeah, I think everyone probably does have a fetish, even if they're not necessarily aware of it. As to the being frightened of it, well, actually, maybe that's where, well, Freud would definitely have something to say about that, wouldn't he?
Yes.
That actually, the more you fear something, in fact, the more you give power to it, and the more you give it power to make you fearful. So it's actually better, in fact, just to be able to go, well, actually, it's not such a big deal. It is just sex. I know it, on this side, it looks a bit frightening, but actually, if you embrace it and run into it and open-mindedly, consciously embrace it and see where it goes, then you find that actually it's not such a big deal, and it's not something... the only thing to fear is fear itself.
Right, but last week, you read from your book that very powerful snippet that involves a young man going to his master's house for the first time to audition to be his pup, and, you know, all that involves, you know, the trembling, the fear, the anticipation, the sexual arousal, all of that kind of stuff. It's very, very powerful. So I've heard people say the same thing, you know, coming into the presence of God in, you know, a cathedral or something like that, or, you know, in nature, you know, being overwhelmed with the power of nature, you know,
awestruck.
Yes, exactly that. So we have this amazing capacity, and the interesting thing is that some people use sexuality to actually access that. Instead of, you know, going to church, you know, they involve themselves in sex play, and they discovered the divine there.
Yes,
it's amazing.
It's very, very old. I mean,
yes,
that concept of being able to, I think it maybe it's, for some people, I suppose that sex and sexuality, it's so deeply rooted within them that it actually taps into that same space that spirituality and God does too. It's that same something huger and greater than they are, but through sexuality, eroticism, that erotic charge, the eroticism in its truest sense, the power of life itself and that which progenates and continues life. Because with sexuality, that's something you feel inside you.
Yeah.
It actually makes you feel, yes, any contact with the divine, as it were, that you feel, it actually comes from inside you, it upwells from inside of you.
Right.
So it becomes much more, rather than coming into the presence of something that you feel you must apologize to, it's something that actually embraces and takes you up and inside and overwhelms you, yes, but in a very positive way. It lifts you,
yes,
you know.
Right.
But then, yeah, I'm a pagan, and all acts of love and pleasure are rituals, as it actually says. Right. So, you know,
I love it. It's so wonderful that we can tie in this conversation between sexuality and spirituality, because that has been the focus of all of my adult life is trying to wed those things that somehow were torn asunder. You know. Years and years and years and years ago. Right. So before we move on, I'm going to have to insist that you read again from your book, because it was so wonderful last week. I have to have a little bit more this week, if you don't mind.
No, at all. This one is actually possibly a little lighter.
Okay.
This is actually based on a piece of actual proper experience.
Okay.
With my handler, and hopefully explains a little bit of what it feels to be a pup as well. So, I bound up the path, my tail wagging with excitement to be seeing my man again. He opens the door with a big grin on his own face, looking resplendent in his rubber bike jacket and jeans. He is nearly knocked over off his feet as I leap into his arms, barking and laughing. We reel back into the hallway as I cover his face with puppy licks. I finally relent when his spluttering and laughing becomes too much, and he has to let me down to the floor. Then I scamper along behind him on all fours as he leads us both into the lounge. There, he pulls me up onto my hind legs and wraps his arms around me in a huge enfolding embrace. He pushes my head down onto his shoulder and strokes the back of my head, his deep voice vibrating in his chest as he tells me those most wonderful of words. Good boy, I love my dog. A deep sob wrenches itself from deep inside of me, born of my love for my man, my surrender to him, and the ache I feel when I am away from him. He rocks me gently, kisses the top of my head, croons his love and support for his dog, and tells me that he will always be here, ready with more hugs whenever I need them. I pull my head from his shoulder, grin up at him, but then find myself distracted by the amazingly glossy shine of his chlorinated rubber jacket and the silky feel of it beneath my hands. My mouth drools as his natural musk blends into the rubber in an amazing heady smell of sex and masculinity. The beautiful eroticism of it makes my puppy cock swell in my jeans, and I find myself start to helplessly bump my crotch against his thigh with a deep sigh. He laughs, rubs my hair, and guides my kissing mouth down along his whole rubberized body until I am once more on my knees and covering the beautiful full mound of his rubber sex in doggy kisses and eagerness. He nudges me off then, and leads us both upstairs and into the playroom, then settles the dog down onto the floor, and finally gives me free rein to lick and lap and tease and probe. I let myself go completely to the grooming of him, the sensation of him against my tongue. My senses fill with the subtle differences in taste and texture over every inch of his meat. The pulsing satin smoothness of his head, the tempting wet groove of his glands, the tautness of his frenum, and the sweet oozing wetness of his precum. Licking him becomes my entire world as I am absorbed into the purely animal act of tasting and feeling. I feel myself sinking deeper and deeper, down into puppy space, and gratefully I allow the dog mind to rise up like a beautiful black tide to wash away all concerns and thoughts and humanity. I lose all sense of time and identity, merge gently and blissfully into becoming simply and only a teasing wet tongue. My efforts fed by the pleasurable groans and sighs that my attention draws from my man. I am lost in the pure bliss of making my man happy. He lets me tease him for what might have been hours. My jaw aches and the floor between my rubbered knees is spit slick with my own drool, but I am happy and blissfully deep. At last I feel the swelling pulse in his head and I know that he is close to coming. He pulls me back by my collar, looks into my eyes and asks, "Does my dog want feeding?" I bark excitedly, still deep in puppy space, and then settle back on my heels, head tipped back, and tongue a red carpet of welcome for his seed. The taste of those few first drops of his cum is amazing, salt and sweet, thick and glutinous. It is really just too much for the dog to resist, and I hungrily swallow his whole meat down deep into my muzzle, down into my throat, so that I can feel him pump his rich treasure directly into my heart.
Holy mackerel. Yikes! Holy cow. Well, there you go, boys and girls. That's hard to pick myself up after that.
Hopefully, the same for my man.
I guess so.
He has said that of the various people that he plays, there is something unique in the fact that his puppy can make him come with just its tongue, which is cool, makes me very proud, and is a very special thing to be able to do to someone. So.
So several of the other guests in this series have also talked about the intoxication of their kinks and fetishes. Mm-hmm. It's not only transformative, but also it's encompassing. I suppose that starts out for most as being just a dilettante, but then the seductive power of it all will demand more and more until the novice becomes the aficionado. Is that your path as well?
Yeah, I suppose really, isn't most life like that, really, when you think about it? You first come across something and it's that bright, shiny thing, you know, that's wow and amazing, and you want to know more about it. And the more you know about it, the more you want to know about it, the deeper you want to go into it. You start investing power and into it because you're interested in it. Mm-hmm. And you become aware of all the subtle nuances and all the little differences that there are within it. So I suppose all of life is like that. Within the scene and within fetish and within kink, you get that a lot as well. And I think potentially it's a little bit old-fashioned now, but actually it's one of the things that you used to get with what was called the old guard, if the old guard ever existed. But you do get this concept where very often you actually almost have this form of mentoring.
Yes.
Where actually you have someone that is more experienced in the kink, who is able to take on someone who is new and someone who is exploring and is maybe a bit lost in the mad, crazy wonderfulness of it all, yeah, and is able almost to be there as a guide and to kind of help them and encourage them and maybe help them steer away from some of the excesses that we all tend to want to leap into immediately. And it's kind of, no, slowly, you know, step at a time, you know. There's time for being suspended from the ceiling for 18 hours in a rubber sleep sack. You know, first of all, go out and buy a jock strap and you know, enjoy that.
I love it. You know, one of the things that I think in our conversation and also in your book, you make the connection between the fetish and everyday life, and the more that happens for people who are unversed in all of this, the better it is, because some folks have this notion that, you know, fetishes, particularly sexual fetishes, are something, you know, like way the fuck off, you know, in no man's land, you know, that they don't even, you know, they don't even recognize. But it's not like that. It's not like that at all. I mean, this is, you know, a normal outcrop, or maybe an abnormal outcrop, I don't know, of the human experience.
Exactly, it's a normal part of the human experience, really, when it comes down to it. And actually, the other thing, just thinking then, is actually, no matter how much weird fucking gear that you've got on, there's always a person inside of it.
Right.
And actually, it's their desires, their experiences, that is driving the whole thing. I have a major thing for rubber, I really do.
You know,
like I said the other day, you know, just the smell or the touch of rubber can actually get me hard. But at the same time, you know, just putting all my rubber in a great big pile in the middle of the bed is not gonna get me off.
Right.
It's actually only when there's somebody inside of it, when it comes alive and it is animated by their passion, by their ideas, by the interaction between the two of us, and the rubber becomes a conduit, that's when it has its real thing. It's sometimes, I suppose, maybe that's what people fear about fetish, is that they think that somehow it's becoming impersonal and it's taking the people away from it. But actually, it's not. It's something that you share with someone else. My handler is a major gear pervert, and it's his thing. Is, you know, everything you can think of, he's got one of it. But actually, it's that kind of kid in a toy box.
Yeah.
His real enjoyment is in actually the sharing of that gear and his passion for that gear with another person.
Right.
And that's what makes it fun.
Right. That's stunning. Thank you for speaking so eloquently about that. Let's talk a little bit about the role of endorphins and adrenaline in this kind of play. Any thoughts about that?
Actually, I must admit, I'm not very much of an adrenaline junkie. I don't, on a chemical level, I don't tend to react very well to adrenaline. It just sets me off into a full-scale panic, and I get the shakes and all sorts. So, actually, I'm much more, I like endorphins more. Piercing and tattooing. My partner is into piercing, and that's much more an adrenaline high, because it's this sort of sudden, sharp, off
right,
it goes.
Right, right.
With me, it's that slow ramping of something that actually is less to do with adrenaline, more to do with endorphins,
that's
where you kind of get this slow build-up, and as it builds up, you take more and more and more, and you then get this euphoric high from the fact that you've kind of been able to go further than you thought you would be able to, but it's taking the time to get there.
Right.
So, and that's actually, that's not just physical, it's also the emotional endorphins that you get as well,
yes,
which
absolutely.
I think is part of the dressing up process.
Right.
To an extent, maybe it's also a little bit of that crossing of taboos and that rule breaking, where actually you get a buzz from the fact that you're doing something a bit naughty, you're doing something that previously you thought was bad,
right,
but then you do it and realize that it wasn't bad and actually makes you feel good.
Right.
So that gives you a double kick almost, as it were.
So many people in the scene speak about BDSM and fetishes and kink as being both recreational and cathartic. I'm guessing that you agree with that, yes?
Yeah, definitely. It's cathartic because it is literally, it's a release from your everyday self. You get to be someone else.
Yes.
A bit like Woody Allen says, you know, love creates tension, but sex releases it. That's why it's cathartic. You know, there is nothing more releasing than the act of coming.
Right.
You know.
Right,
recreation, well, you're back to the whole play thing. You know, it is purely sex between two adults is the ultimate in play.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything, and yet is the most important thing in the world. So, you know, what better definition of play can you get?
Right.
to me, it's also actually it's shamanic as well.
Yes, I totally agree. I keep making that connection, you know, between the spiritual and the carnal. As we talk, and as I was reading your book, I mean, it's just it's perfectly clear to me.
Well, particularly with fetish and gear fetish, that taking on in the process of dressing up, it's the classic is the leather man. You know, you put on the full leathers, you put on the jacket, the Marlon Brando cap. You are taking on this archetype, the archetype of the incredibly powerful, self-empowered masculine man. And even if you are the biggest queen in the world, you dress you up in leather and you take on that masculinity.
Right. It's so true. It is so true.
And you that transforms you. It changes you. Yes. It empowers you.
Yeah.
And it's the same, I think, with most of them. It actually probably, I've got friends who are transvestites. I've got a couple of friends who are transsexuals as well. And they talk about the same process,
right,
in that dressing up as a woman or dressing up as a man if you're a woman.
Right.
You know, that taking on the appearance of the other gender enables you to, at least on some level, experience how it feels to be that gender, or to allow that part of yourself to come up,
right,
and to explore it and to try it,
right,
and then to take it back off again and return to yourself safely,
right,
but having learned something in the process. And that's shamanism.
Right.
That is pure shamanism.
Right. You mentioned last week that you were raised a Catholic. I was a Catholic priest for 20 years, and it was not a happy association, I might add. And I can tell you the story about it at some point. But anyhow, the reason that I bring it up now is that it's the same thing, you know, with regard to, you know, putting on vestments.
Mm-hmm.
And going through the rituals, you know, the Catholic rituals or the Christian rituals that, you know, that expand me as a person, as, you know, the clergy,
mm-hmm,
clergy person, you know, expands me, makes me, you know, this medium between the divinity and, you know, humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be all wonderful and liberating, and it was supposed to be a way of, you know, helping the congregation realize itself. But,
mm-hmm,
you know, oftentimes that is just transformed into, you know, this big power trip. And,
yeah,
you know, when the person takes off his vestments or her vestments, you know, they still are this pumped up, you know, crazy, maniacal, idiot person.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I never
and
understood
feel
that.
Because you've done it, because,
yes,
you've touched God somehow, that you are unique,
yeah,
which is kind of, well, no, I suppose maybe that's from being a pagan,
yes,
where actually we have this concept that actually the divine is within every single person.
Right, right, right.
And even where you're a priest, which, you know, I'm a witch as well, so I actually,
yes,
run a coven and everything,
yes, yes,
high priest, but still you get that concept that, yes, I might have walked further along this path than you have currently, but eventually you will walk it further than I have.
Yes.
So there is that.
Yeah.
I'd say humility, but actually it's not humility, it's recognition that,
right,
each and every one of us is a star and we're all governing our own orbit.
Right.
Which
and
is
but that's the enlightened, that
else,
really
but.
Is the enlightened part of the whole thing. And, you know, I mean, because it's easily corrupted. I mean, when some people have a sense of power over other people, or then it ruins them. It absolutely ruins them. And it becomes, you know, a means to dominate and not a
in a bad
sensual
way. Yeah. Yeah.
Sort,
yeah,
of way, and it's awful, and that's what I see going on in organized religion for the most part today. I'm seeing that our time is up again. This is astonishing because there's so much stuff that I wanted to talk to you about. I wanted to talk to you about polyamory and, you know, who are your sexual heroes and whatnot. And maybe at some point we can resume this conversation. It's been such a joy being with you.
Genuinely pleasurable. I love talking like this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good. So as we conclude, can you give us again your website address and walk us around, mm-hmm, and let us know where we can buy your book?
Okay. The one website that I maintain the most and that has the most up-to-date materials and stuff is my blog, which is bootbrushpup.blogspot.com. And that's actually where I test some of my new stories before writing them in publication. It's also where I maintain a diary of my pub play experiences and my fetish experiences, that kind of stuff. There is also from there, there is a link to the Panskin, which is the website that I maintain for my partner and I, which is where it goes slightly more into shamanic aspects and there's more sort of spirituality, I suppose. And from there, there is also then links to my author page on Amazon, which is where you can currently get the book from, Assimilation, Tales of Transformation and Surrender. And yes, at the moment it's available through Amazon in paperback, but also in electronic formats. And shortly, because it has only just been released, shortly it'll be available through things like Barnes & Noble and the usual all good bookstores. Hopefully that'll be available shortly. So.
Terrific. Well, I appreciate all of your time, your wonderful insight, your generous reading. And until we speak again, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. It's been fantastic.
Good,
really
good.
Enjoyed.
Be well. Okay. Be happy.
Thank you.
Bye.
And you too. Bye.
Pretty amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next Monday for a special Q&A show and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
They come here. They all come here. How do they find me?
Maybe they're looking for me and not you. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, here's a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you'd like takes practice. Sure, you can learn how to last longer simply by using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It is just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with a stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice, this puppy will help you last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with the Endurance Jack, you will have all the skills that you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old US of A. And if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these fine shows. Now, you can help underwrite this important sex-positive effort and pleasure yourself at the same time. How fun is that? Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.